Hello, you're listening to GossipInt, the way to gossip intelligently. GossipInt is a podcast that helps listeners learn critical thinking concepts by applying them to well-known pop culture events and real-world technology-focused examples. Here with us today, we have Diana Duvielle, Karen Frost, and Caitlin Hopkins. And I'm your host, Bobby Jane. Details on our backgrounds can be found in the podcast bio. Although all participants today work at Microsoft, the views expressed here belong to us alone and do not represent the views of Microsoft. Welcome to our creative and imaginative world of GossipInt. Today, we're talking about something called covert influence. Diana, you're starting us off today. What is covert influence?
Let's start with a little bit of background on how nation-states use covert influence. Foreign governments routinely engage in efforts to influence each other's domestic and foreign policies, legislation, or public opinion. Sometimes they exert this influence using lobbyists, PR professionals, or prominent business people, even former government officials. Such efforts are illegal as long as they are happening transparently and in the open. For example, the Chinese embassy in the US issues remarks or opinions related to current affairs, like putting forward China's position in response to remarks that the US government has made on Taiwan participating in the UN system. Now, the Chinese government is likely seeking to influence US policy and public perception on the Taiwan issue, but it's not in a covert way. On the other hand, let's take the example of Ms. Christine Lee in the UK last year. Ms. Lee, a lawyer, used the cover of representing the British Chinese community to obscure her activities on behalf of what was actually the Chinese government. She was promoting the Chinese Communist Party agenda through her involvement in various parliamentary groups and providing donations to political parties in the UK. China and Russia are both infamous for their vast and successful covert influence apparatuses, which operate here in the US and around the world. In the realm of technology, China and Russia are notorious for using social media platforms for conducting covert influence. Last September, Facebook parent company Meta announced it had detected and shut down two separate networks of fake accounts engaged in covert influence operations, a small one run from China and a vast one run from Russia. Meta said the network of Russian accounts it had taken down pushed pro-Kremlin narratives about the war in Ukraine and included thousands of accounts and pages across multiple social media platforms. They had spent more than $100,000 on ads on Facebook and Instagram. The operations included websites that were designed to mimic real Western press outlets, including The Guardian. According to a list of website addresses included in the Meta report, the Russia campaign also registered fake sites designed to look like The Daily Mail and German outlets like Bild and Der Spiegel.
Diana, this is a super interesting topic and very top of mind for many folks. And Karen, you're going to be diving into our pop culture. So how does this all kind of tie into pop culture? And I'm sure you have a Hollywood industry example for us.
Covert influence happens literally all the time in Hollywood. It's woven into the fabric of the industry, an extremely important part of how players in the industry seek to influence regular people like you and me. Over the course of this podcast, we've talked about all sorts of ways that Hollywood manipulates us, from setting up celebrities on fake dates to even possibly fake pregnancies. These are all a form of covert influence. Hollywood wants us to believe certain things about certain celebrities, and it works very, very well. Part of the reason this covert influence is so successful is because we outsiders don't really have any way to verify the information. So if People magazine tells us that some celebrity is America's sweetheart, it's hard not to take it at face value. We're not going to parties where we find out that this so-called sweetheart is actually doing drugs and drunk driving. We have to just go along with it until we get evidence otherwise.
And there have been so many American sweethearts. I mean, I'm pretty sure they revamp that every couple of years.
Actually, I'd argue that we stopped using that expression a decade ago, about the time we decided we don't like cheesy rom-coms. But anyway, another reason covert influence in Hollywood is so successful is because we often want these things to be true. We want to believe, for example, that our favorite celebrity is philanthropic or single, or that they build homes for the homeless on their days off. This means that subconsciously, we're willing to be less critical of the information that we receive about these celebrities. We're happy to be ignorant about the dark side of celebrity culture because it's much more enjoyable to focus on the light, fun side. So certainly, Hollywood uses covert influence against people outside of the industry, but interestingly, it can also use covert influence on itself And that's where things get really fun.
Okay, so what's an example of that?
Do you remember when Anne Hathaway won an Oscar for Les Mis and then overnight suddenly became one of Hollywood's most hated celebrities?
Yeah, I think I recall something weird like that.
At the time, I thought it was really weird. I'd never heard a bad thing about her in the gossip world, and her fall happened so fast. One day she was winning an Oscar, the next every major news source was reporting on how terrible she was. On the surface, there were a bunch of explanations offered up by the media as to why the press, and by extension the public, was suddenly turning on her. She was one of those goody-two-shoes theater kids whom everyone hates. She was trying too hard in interviews. She came off as phony and insincere in her Oscar speech. She was too emotional. But none of these things make sense, given she'd been in the industry for a decade before Hollywood suddenly decided she was insufferable. She'd starred in successful movies like The Princess Diaries, Ella Enchanted, The Devil Wears Prada, and Brokeback Mountain. In fact, prior to the slew of articles about her phoniness, she was considered a solid, likable actress. So what happened? Maybe it really was her Oscars acceptance speech that doomed her career for a few years. She wouldn't be the first. Remember Sally Field's infamous, "You like me, you really like me" speech, which has been mocked ever since?
Karen, I think you and I might be the only two here that know that speech.
And technically, that's actually a misquote. What she actually said was, "I can't deny the fact that you like me. Right now, you like me." And she's frustrated by this constant misquoting. But I can't help wondering if something else happened to Hathaway. Did someone in Hollywood successfully launch a smear campaign against her, working behind the scenes with select journalists to release unfavorable articles about her? Were the articles too orchestrated? The backlash too inorganic?
So you're saying yes, you think something was behind this all?
I'm saying it's a possibility worth considering. It may sound like this theory should belong in our last episode, which was about conspiracy theories, but we know smear campaigns do happen in Hollywood, especially when it comes to the Oscars. In 2010, for example, Newsweek published an article detailing some of the tactics used by studios to try and take down the Oscar frontrunners of rival studios. So was Hathaway the victim of an accidentally delayed campaign to secure another actress the Oscar that she ended up winning? Was she being denigrated in order to make room for an up-and-comer like Jennifer Lawrence, who won an Oscar that year in a different category?
Okay, so I know you probably don't have an answer for this, but what would be the point of running a campaign so delayed after she won the Oscar? I'm wondering, how is that even an accident?
Because what if the campaign was started before the Oscar win, but it's only after that it caught on? Sometimes you can't predict virality. You record a YouTube video in 2013, for example, but it doesn't become popular until 2015. The same thing could have happened here, but on a time scale of months, not years. Or maybe Hathaway made an enemy who decided to wreak their revenge post-Oscars. Producer Harvey Weinstein, for example, was known to retaliate against actresses who rejected him. Could Hathaway have crossed someone powerful enough to temporarily cripple her career? It's definitely worth wondering, especially considering how many articles in the last 4 years have been written about how wrong it was to attack Hathaway and what a great actress and person she is.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
Before I move on from this, I want to quote an article from the website The Taco, published in 2020, because I think it really drives home the idea of invisible influence campaigns at play in Hollywood. Per The Taco, sometimes a rumor mill can be executed so smoothly, no one knows who is behind it, although the usual suspects tend to be rival studios. That was the case with Best Picture nominee A Beautiful Mind, a Ron Howard-directed biopic on the mathematical genius and paranoid schizophrenic John Nash. Gossip spread around the industry about the movie avoiding any references to Nash being a gay schizophrenic. Then word spread that the screenplay took material from another script that was never used, an allegation that studio company Universal Pictures denied. Despite the tactics, the film still won 4 Oscars, including Best Picture. In this case, the influence campaign might not have spread outside Hollywood, but inside Hollywood, the battle was obviously raging.
Okay, so I thought that smear was going to include Russell Crowe because I recall quite a bit of negativity around him. He was kind of a mean guy on set. I don't even know if it crossed my mind that campaigns would be set up against a director, even a Best Picture nominee, but I mean, I guess that makes total sense.
Crowe has definitely had some negative publicity, and it probably didn't help that he and actress Meg Ryan dated right after her separation from ex-husband Dennis Quaid was announced. A story which, by the way, is a good example of how sexism plays into media coverage. But one of my favorite covert influence campaigns in Hollywood actually involves Richard Gere and a gerbil. Now, for the sake of our listeners, I won't say what exactly Geer was alleged to have done with this gerbil, but let's just say that around 1984, a rumor started that Geer ended up at California's Cedars-Sinai Hospital as a result of said gerbil.
Oh, Karen, I think I'm pretty sure I heard this rumor on the playground.
There's every chance you did, because this rumor has persisted for decades. In fact, if you Google it, you'll find plenty of articles about it written well into the 2020s. References to the rumor have also been sprinkled throughout TV shows and other pop culture for years. And this rumor wasn't limited to whispers. In the 1990s, right after Pretty Woman came out starring Geer, someone sent fax machines across Hollywood a fake press release from the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals about Geer and gerbil abuse. It's a rumor that just won't die. And even today, random internet users will pop up to claim their aunt, cousin, friend's grandfather was at the hospital when Geer arrived, ensuring the urban legend always remains evergreen.
What would have been the purpose for this rumor? I mean, it is so bizarre.
While we may not know who started the possible smear campaign against Hathaway, if indeed there was one, Geer is pretty sure he knows who's behind this one. In 1974, Geer and Sylvester Stallone were filming the movie The Lords of Flatbush together. The two actors didn't get along, however, and Stallone actually had Geer fired from the project, possibly creating lasting bad blood between the two. Stallone has denied being the origin of the gerbil rumor, but if it was him, the rumor carried an intentional 1-2 punch. Not only did it paint Geer as being into a weird and unpalatable sexual kink, but there's also an insinuation of homosexuality as well. A real broadside against someone on the precipice of becoming a leading man in Hollywood.
I don't think I've heard the movie The Lords of the Flatbush. I definitely haven't heard of that, but wow. This one's a wow.
Ultimately, I doubt this rumor hurt Geer's acting career, but unfortunately for him, his name will be associated with gerbils for a few more decades to come. At least until Gen Zers who haven't heard the rumor will be the majority of the population. So in that sense, whoever started the rumor was highly effective at their influence campaign. And every time we talk about the rumor, like we are right now, we give it more persistence. Sorry, Mr. Geer.
That's so wild. I don't think I've even heard of any small rodent rumors. And when I say small rodent, like before or even after Richard Geer, it's so bananas. Too extreme to even be real or be believable.
Well, this is one of the fundamental questions of covert influence, isn't it? We can understand why messages that seem fact-based and logical persist. But what about the messages that seem so outlandish it's a shock that anyone would believe them? In this case, I think there are two major factors at play. First, the gerbil urban legend thrives because people who hear it love how over the top it is. It's very memorable. It can be summarized in a single sentence that can then be shared in a titillating conversation over dinner. The other factor is what we might call the friend of a friend effect. Even after all these years, whenever the rumor comes up on social media, it seems someone always pops up to claim secondhand access to the information, offering corroboration to allay the suspicions of would-be doubters. As we know, it's easy for someone to lie on the internet and claim their mom was the anesthesiologist who treated Geer or a podiatrist in the hospital who heard the story from the ER doctor. People tell these kinds of lies all the time about all sorts of topics, not just celebrities. And even though these sources are unsubstantiated, and we have to point out, are lying, they still lend credibility to the rumor, which then contributes to its longevity.
So to be a successful rumor or campaign, keep it short and memorable and ensure you can never truly verify it.
I think this, what we might view as a case study, shows that covert influence campaigns work best when the campaign's audience turns around to become the primary broadcasters of that misinformation. I can pay a bot army to spread lies about a celebrity, for example, but there's a good chance I'll be more successful if I start planting snippets on Reddit in which I claim to have firsthand or secondhand knowledge of the celebrity's misdeeds. If I'm clever enough, other people will then start sharing my message organically. It's like I turned on the autopilot and walked away.
And I think this happens way more than people realize. They share secondhand information, not realizing that what they're sharing is one complete fabrication and complete with an agenda and a target audience.
Or they share it knowing it's a total fabrication. There's another urban legend like the Geer gerbil rumor, by the way. This time it's about singer Rod Stewart and a trip to the hospital. It's a crazy rumor that makes absolutely no sense. And in fact, no one actually believes it. People have literally worked out the physics of the rumor to prove it's not possible. And yet you can still Google the rumor and read about it. Why does it still pop up in conversation? In this case, we're back to factor one, the salacious factor.
Okay, so my curious brain will definitely have to Google that one. But Karen, I wanted to ask you, What's the craziest Hollywood covert influence story you've heard?
Maybe not the craziest, because again, it's hard to top the Gerbil story, but certainly the most recent. Back in 2020, the gossip site Crazy Days and Nights, CDAN, which has, I want to emphasize, very questionable gossip, started posting stories about an A-list celebrity who would buy a large fish from a grocery store, disappear into the men's restroom with it, and then reemerge without the fish. Shortly thereafter, CDAN added not one but two more pieces of gossip, allegedly from readers, corroborating the fish story firsthand and secondhand. No one knows what was done with the fish, so the assumption is that it's something sexual, making it an instantly salacious story. Gossip fans, eager to believe the gossip, narrowed their guesses down to one particular actor based on his shooting schedules at the time these alleged fish purchases were witnessed.
Karen, what? That's crazy.
This is obviously a crazy story in general, but what interests me about it is that it seems a clear effort to replicate the Gear Gerbil story. We have an animal, a famous actor, an implied sexual perversion. So who went through quite a bit of effort back in 2020 to defame this actor? Whom did he anger enough that they fabricated multiple false witnesses to boost the rumor's credibility? I have no idea, but ever since those few postings on CDAN, there's been no further gossip about this activity. So it seems safe to say that whoever started this whisper campaign has moved on to something else.
But why?
Now, I call this an example of covert influence, but actually that might not be the case. Yes, it could be someone trying to smear an enemy, in which case it would be covert influence. But it could also be one celebrity trying to prank another celebrity friend. Or, and this is an interesting idea, a celebrity could have been testing whether their associates would leak to the media by telling them a tall tale and seeing if that tale popped up on the internet. Or it could have all been one giant hoax. One day we could have the answer to which of these scenarios it was, if the source chose to tell someone in an interview. But more likely we'll never know. At least it seems the fish of the world are safe. At least from possible molestation from a Hollywood celebrity.
My goodness. Well, thank you, Karen, for that pop culture conversation. Let's move on over to Caitlin with our tech topic. Caitlin, what do you have for us today?
As we've discussed already, covert influence can take many shapes, and that's no different in the realm of technology and science. I want to focus today on covert influence in a business context, particularly with how companies use covert influence when marketing and advertising. Interestingly enough, there's already an industry term for the use of covert influence in marketing, and that's stealth marketing. Basically, it's any type of marketing method that promotes a product or service to consumers without their knowledge. The primary objective is not to drive immediate sales, but rather to foster curiosity and excitement around a product that makes consumers more susceptible to direct advertising in the future. There are loads of ways this is done, but the most widely known are product placement and certain types of influencer marketing. We see this used successfully all the time. Ray-Bans, for instance, is a great example of product placement leading to financial success. In the early 1980s, Ray-Ban was struggling financially at best, only selling around 18,000 pairs of sunglasses each year. Then, in 1986, the brand skyrocketed, selling over 40,000 pairs basically overnight and millions of pairs all over the globe. In particular, the aviator style of sunglasses grew continuously for many years, and in the 2020s, they continue to be a fashion staple. But what caused them to spike? Good product placement in a very successful movie. Can you guys guess? The answer is that Tom Cruise wore them in the movie Top Gun. Ray-Ban paid for its aviator sunglasses to be featured prominently on screen and worn by Maverick. After this smashing success, Ray-Ban continued to use this tactic to promote its products. In The Blues Brothers, Ray-Ban paid for John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd's characters to wear Wayfarers. And in Men in Black, the company paid for Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones' characters to wear Predator 2s, helping Ray-Ban to reach a large and diverse audience and establishing its products as highly desirable and stylish accessories. In 1999, the Nokia 8110 banana phone was featured in The Matrix. Demand was so high following the movie that Nokia actually took over as the leading mobile phone supplier. Looking at the pictures of the phone now, it looks dated. But at the time, this was a great way to showcase cutting-edge technology.
This is a really great example. I mean, meant to be covert or not, it's a brilliantly successful influence tool.
Yes. But if you think more about it, self-marketing has more serious implications when the product or service is more consequential than, you know, sunglasses or cell phones. For example, I'm sure almost everyone knows about how the tobacco industry dumped money into Hollywood to glamorize smoking and place cigarette brand logos in films back in the day. In the late 1970s, Philip Morris not only paid to have Marlboro logos put into the Superman movies, but it also paid to have Lois Lane chain smoke through the movie, a detail that was definitely not in the comic books.
I did not know that, but I mean, I'm definitely not surprised. I mean, Big Tobacco has a long, shameful history.
You're right, Bobby Jane. As we all know, paid tobacco product placements in movies and TV are now prohibited by federal law. So problem solved, right? Well, not exactly. There are other types of stealth marketing strategies that companies, including those in the tobacco and pharmaceutical industries, use to covertly influence consumers. The first, and in my opinion, the most dangerous, is something called astroturfing. In this stealth marketing strategy, an organization creates a false impression of grassroots support for or opposition to a product, service, or political viewpoint. These astroturfing campaigns often employ fake online personas, paid influencers, and other shady tactics to create the appearance of a grassroots movement or campaign. But in reality, it's being orchestrated by a company or organization with vested interests.
Okay, so here's our tech tie-in for the day. They're leveraging social media, right? And a few campaigns that come to my mind are Dow Chemical, Big Oil, and the NFL, actually, who literally use AstroTurf.
Yes, the term AstroTurfing is quite clever. It's derived from the artificial grass used on sports fields, which is designed to look like natural grass, even though it's a manufactured synthetic material. Similarly, AstroTurfing in the marketing context is designed to look like genuine support, but it's actually a synthetic creation designed to manipulate public opinion. It's easy to imagine how bot armies and other social media manipulation techniques could really amplify this problem. Are people actually excited about the newest phone or wireless earbuds? Or is all that buzz just astroturfing? But the problem actually predates a lot of our current online stuff.
You definitely have us thinking now, Caitlin.
To go back to the tobacco company Philip Morris, in the late 1990s, the company was involved in a controversy over a campaign called Get Government Off Our Back. The campaign was designed to look like a grassroots movement opposing government regulations and taxes on the tobacco industry, but it was actually a movement funded and orchestrated by Philip Morris. The campaign organized rallies and protests, sent out mass mailings, and recruited volunteers to contact lawmakers and media outlets. Very old school, right? But it was later revealed that many of the volunteers were actually paid actors.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Similarly, there have been several other instances of pharmaceutical companies using astroturfing as a stealth marketing tactic. One well-known example involves the drug maker Merck and its promotion of the painkiller Vioxx. In the late 1990s, Merck launched the Women's Health and Hormones campaign. The campaign claimed to be working to raise awareness about menopause and related health issues, but it was actually using its platform to promote Vioxx as a safe and effective treatment for pain. The campaign used a plethora of tactics to promote Vioxx and downplay its risk. It sponsored medical conferences, ghostwrote articles in medical journals, and created patient education materials. It targeted women specifically because they were seen as a key demographic for Vioxx and the product's profitability.
That's a lot of effort for one campaign for one pain pill, which I believe was comparable to ibuprofen.
Yeah. Obviously, using manipulation tactics like this is already bad. But even worse is that in 2004, Merck withdrew Vioxx from the market after studies showed that the drug was associated with an increased risk of heart attack and stroke. In fact, an investigation revealed that Merck had conducted a clinical trial known as the Vigor study that found Vioxx was associated with a higher risk of heart attack than competing painkillers like naproxen. But Merck hid these results while continuing to market Vioxx as a safer pain reliever than its competitors. Later studies and investigations estimated that Vioxx had caused tens of thousands of premature deaths worldwide and up to 27,000 heart attacks and sudden cardiac deaths in the United States alone.
Oh, absolutely. It was shown to double the chances of heart attack with long-term use.
Merck, Vioxx, and the Women's Health and Hormones campaign serves as a cautionary tale about the potential for pharmaceutical companies to use covert influence via stealth marketing tactics to advance their own financial interests at the expense of consumer health. And by the way, remember when reports came out in 2016 that Galaxy Note 7 batteries were exploding, and so they were basically banned from use on airplanes. The batteries really did explode, and Samsung recalled 2.5 million of the phones. But I'm also willing to bet that the publicity that followed about how dangerous those phones were was likely a quiet campaign by Samsung's competitors to try and steal some market share. So covert influence campaigns in tech can both promote products and denigrate those of rivals.
Well, thank you, Caitlin. It makes it really challenging to believe anything, especially from the pharmaceutical industry. But covert influence seems to be present just about everywhere. We would be doing ourselves a huge disservice not to be aware of who may be trying to influence us and why. It's always good to keep our critical thinking caps on when we hear, one, very unlikely rumors, or we're dealing with people or companies seeking money, power, or influence. All right, ladies, that's it for today's episode. Next episode is our 24th and final episode of Gossipint, you guys. I can't believe it's almost over. We've had so much fun making these podcasts, and we hope our listeners have enjoyed it just as much as we have. So tune in next time as we review what we have learned over the course of this podcast and give some final thoughts on critical thinking, gossip, and technology. Thank you. And you're listening to Gossipint.